Richard Holmes is the author of The Age of Wonder, How the Romantic Generation Discovered the Beauty and Terror of Science. In a chapter called Dr. Frankenstein and the Soul, Holmes explores how Mary Shelley's 1818 novel Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus, came out of the scientific climate at the time. Holmes sketched out the cultural cross-currents for Steve Paulson.
There's also evidence that Mary Shelley attended and read the lectures of Humphrey Davy. And here's a very characteristic mixture, because Humphrey Davy, the great chemist, is another important figure in the book. And he gives lectures describing the great breakthroughs in electrical theory and chemistry, and putting forward the notion that progress would be unstoppable, and particularly the discovery of electrical power would lead to completely new kinds of experiments, and mankind would dominate the material world in a completely new way. These lectures, they are very extraordinary. They're published, they're still available. Mary read them, and there's some evidence that Davy himself is also one of the models for the fictional Victor Frankenstein. Mm. So Mary explores these ideas of vitalism. Victor Frankenstein is trained as a physician and a chemist, and gradually has this idea that if he can produce, like a manufacture, a human life, then it might be possible, and his idea is progressive. It's meant to benefit mankind. It's often forgotten this, that once you do this, the possibilities of curing all kinds of disease and bringing back people who are diseased but also dead, this opens up a whole new field which will benefit mankind. So Victor Frankenstein initially is meant to be a benevolent figure, often forgotten this. Mm-hmm. But Mary then goes on to explore the implications of he actually produces the creature, as the monster is called in the novel. And a very interesting imaginative shift. She says, okay, we'll assume the science, but what is the nature of this creature that has been produced by artificial means?
I guess the question is, does Frankenstein's creature have a soul?
That's exactly it. And I think this is an absolutely central theme of the novel, and I explore this at some length. And Mary is quite extraordinary the way she, I mean, this is a very good example of an imaginative writer getting hold of a scientific theme and then turning it upside down, looking at it, exploring its implications. If you read the novel carefully, when the creature breaks out of the laboratory and goes into the woods, it's very carefully described by Mary that he has no memory, he has no language. It's a wonderful passage where he, in the woods at night, he looks up at the moon and he doesn't have a word to name the moon. And he sees this very beautiful object, but he has no language, he's learnt no language.
I started up and beheld a radiant form rise from among the trees. I gazed with a kind of wonder. It moved slowly, but it enlightened my path, and I again went out in search of berries. I was still cold when under one of the trees I found a huge cloak, with which I covered myself and sat down upon the ground. No distinct ideas occupied my mind. All was confused. I felt light and hunger and thirst and darkness. Innumerable sounds rang in my ears, and on all sides various scents saluted me. Sometimes I tried to imitate the pleasant songs of the birds, but was unable. Sometimes I wished to express my sensations in my own mode, but the uncouth and inarticulate sounds which broke from me frightened me into silence again.
And he listens to the sounds of birds in the morning, and he thinks, there's a language, could I learn that language? So actually, the study of the monster is the study of a soul, as it were, coming awake. And gradually, through a very skillful part of the plotting, the monster learns about human history. It does indeed learn language and so on, concepts of war. But because he's a reject from society, because he's an artificial creation, he is very cruelly, first of all, handled by people because he's so ugly. And then he, in turn, becomes cruel and vengeful. And this is Mary exploring the idea of a human being who doesn't have a soul, or not a soul as we would recognize it. So there is a theological text underneath that book, as well as a whole series of scientific ideas that are brilliantly explored.
Why do you think the story of Frankenstein has proved to be so enduring?
Good question. Very interesting. That book, when it was published in 1818, it only was published in 500 copies. It was almost unknown as a work. It was thought possibly it was written by Walter Scott, or indeed by Shelley himself. Very interesting. The idea that an 18-year-old woman could have written it was inconceivable. And how she came to write it itself is a very interesting literary question, someone that young. But that first edition of the novel had almost no readership. But what happened while Mary was still out in Italy, in fact, after Shelley drowned, the theatre world in London got hold of it. And it became the text for a series of theatrical productions. And I've traced there were 5 separate productions of Frankenstein, or Presumption was one of the subtitles. These productions were put on all over England, and indeed they came to America, to New York. And that is what initially popularized the book. But in turning it into a play, a lot of the philosophical implications are dumped, and it becomes something much closer to the modern film versions. And for example, I've talked about the monster, the creature learning human language as part of becoming a soul in some sense. In the dramatic productions, he has no language. He cannot speak. And you can see in imaginative terms, this totally transforms the story, because in the novel, we are inside the creature's mind and we suffer with him. And indeed, he's the most articulate person in the whole novel. His speeches are wonderful, almost operatic. But in the theatrical versions, and subsequently in the modern film versions, he has no language, he does not speak, so he simply becomes a monster. And this is the modern version of the threat of science. Science will always produce monsters. And in a way, it's a great distortion of the original novel, because the idea initially was to do something benevolent that would benefit mankind. And that idea completely drops from modern interpretations of Frankenstein. And I think, therefore, it's haunted people in a modern world where there is still great fear of the effects of science. I think the Two Cultures lecture by C.P. Snow, given in 1959, I think that was partly inspired by the terror that nuclear weapons had produced. And this alienated a scientific culture from a more humane and literary one. I think this has completely changed now with problems of climate change and energy resources and so on. But I think that fear that science was always going to produce monsters, it would promise benefits, but it would produce monsters, runs very deep in Western culture. But we need to get over it.
Richard Holmes is the author of The Age of Wonder, How the Romantic Generation Discovered the Beauty and Terror of Science. He spoke with Steve Paulson.